Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Royal Oats William. That was the only way I can make this work without saying something that would shoot myself in the foot.
Yeah, I was waiting for that. So
yes, I win.
Not really. Nobody really wins.
We have an interesting episode today as we're going to be doing a back-to-back review of the two Coming to America movies. So stick around as we dive into that, talk about that, and kind of deconstruct exactly what we just saw. So, but before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's the new streaming platform. Yeah.
Also connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers, on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. Yeah, see, what I ended up doing was I started saying Facebook and filmlosophers at the same time.
That's what it was. Okay, well, yeah, check us out on our website at filmlosophers, not for that, but filmlosophers.com. We have over 250 episodes. We did some really great episodes this past month. Check them out. We are excited to see what the new year has in store because, to be quite honest, we don't even know what this year has in store for us. But check us out, filmlosophers.com, also on our on socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. This week's episode is a little interesting because we haven't done a back-to-back episode since we were doing some for Netflix, when we were doing those back-to-back episodes for some of the similar tech movies or things like that. So this is a first to have like a back-to-back review of, the recent one is an Amazon Prime film, but the original one is Paramount way back when. So let's go ahead and just dive into our back-to-back review of Coming to America. This movie, literally, it's Coming to America with both of them. It's just different pronunciations of the middle two, whether if it's two with a T-O or two with the number two. These movies are uniquely iconic. Well, the first movie is uniquely iconic, as it did kind of display some of Eddie Murphy's more common quirks that you see in film. And so the Hollywood gods saw it fit to create a second follow-up, and we are going to talk about that.
Yep.
So before we do, Spencer, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
In the wealthy African nation of Zamunda, Crown Prince Akeem Jofer must journey with his best friend and personal aide, Sammy, to the strange land of Queens, New York, in search of something precious. Both adventures will create an internal struggle within Akeem, forcing him to grow into the king he now needs to be more than ever, not the one tradition expected him to be.
Doesn't that kind of encapsulate both movies? I mean,
yeah.
I was just like, I'm like, yeah, I didn't want to put two synopsises on there and have you read back to back.
Because it's the same movie.
It's the same movie. Yes, exactly. So directed by the first one by John Landis and the second one by Craig Brewer, but both of them written by Eddie Murphy. The film stars, obviously, Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, James Earl Jones, Cherie Headley, Jermaine Fowler, Leslie Jones, Tracy Morgan, Kiki Lane, Tayana Taylor, Wesley Snipes, and John Amos. One little tidbit that kind of encapsulates both films that's iconic now with anything you see Eddie Murphy in is this film, the first film, actually is the first time Eddie Murphy played multiple characters in the same film, which, like I said, ultimately became his trademark. There's a lot to be said about these two movies. Now, these two movies in itself are... I need to take a step back here. The first film. Let's talk about the first film, Coming T.O., Coming to America. That is an iconic film that kind of encapsulates Eddie Murphy's, comedic timing during the 80s, personally, I feel like. And this was a movie that everybody had at least seen once. It didn't really matter where you were from, how you grew up, where you were raised. Everybody's seen this movie, if not in theaters, maybe on VHS or DVD, or you happen to catch it on a Fox Saturday afternoon movie. I mean, let's be honest, that's where most of the movies that we're like, I don't remember that. That's where they usually land. So interestingly enough, this was a choice of Spencer's to check out this movie. Was there any particular reason why, other than sheer torment?
Well, you know, lack of things really to choose from coronavirus. Plus, actually, one of the main reasons is, like, horrifyingly, like, I was constantly, like, getting people, like, telling me, it's like, oh, yeah, this movie's pretty good. And I'm like, this is before I've seen this, and I'm like, no, you must be wrong. There's no way this movie's good.
Are you talking about the second one?
I'm talking about the second one.
Oh, okay. You got that?
No, honestly, that's what people were telling me.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. People were telling you that? Yeah. I actually had nobody tell me anything about this movie.
Yeah, that's what I expected. And that's why I was surprised when I was getting like, ooh, it's good. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, this movie is very unique in the fact that even with as many promotions as Amazon Prime tried to push out there, all I knew was that Leslie Jones was in the movie. That's all I knew. Like, other than obviously the main people from the first one, all I knew was that Leslie Jones was in it because Leslie Jones is a very commanding, has a very commanding presence, and not just in like an acting, like professional kind of way, just she's a very imposing person. So when she's on screen or, you know, doing whatever, she's there. You notice her.
You're not going to not notice
Leslie Exactly. Jones. Exactly. And so it had been, however, like, ages since the first time I saw the first Coming to America. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm going to be blunt with you. I'm not a big fan of Eddie Murphy's humor. A lot of it kind of seemed around the same, like the same styles during the 80s. Like everything that I saw, whether if it was Beverly Hills Cop or whatever it was, you know, what is that? Harlem Nights, his role in that, or his role in this one, or his role in Trading Places, they all kind of seem to swirl around the same comedic effects. Like, you get a lot of that fourth wall break, you get a lot of that, you know, the kind of soulful sound, you know, when he's like talking to people. And then now when you get like some of the effects of him playing multiple people, there just seemed to always be a constant with that. So I'm not really a big fan of Eddie Murphy. Like, I probably didn't become a fan of his until actually I saw his stand-up Raw, which was, oddly enough, after I saw those 80s movies. And I liked him as a person. I just didn't like some of his movies. Like, his movies kind of hit their stride in the 90s. And the early 2000s, like he started kind of finding his place in mainstream movies. They weren't specifically like just focused on like the black community. They weren't focused on, you know, any form of his comedic tropes. It was simply him just being him, whether if it was The Nutty Professor Part 1 or Part 2, whether if it was Dr. Doolittle. I mean, he really did make a name for himself in a lot of those movies. Mm-hmm. So my honest opinion of the man is more so based on what he did recently rather than what he did, you know, before. I don't know. What about you? What were some of your first experiences with this man?
This movie and really Mulan are kind of like the earliest.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then don't forget Shrek.
Yeah, of course. So like with like the 1, 2, 3 of like these three things, like I liked what I saw of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like looking through like his list of movies made, I have not seen a lot of his other movies.
So Life is a hilarious movie. Life was him and Martin Lawrence. Hilarious. Like I said, Dr. Doolittle. You said Mulan. The Nutty Professor. Vampires in New York. Vampire in New York was actually good. But I didn't see any of the other stuff. Like, I'm looking at a lot of his other stuff, and I'm like, okay, he's accredited for the Michael Jackson Remember the Time video. Now, that's good. But, like, everything from the 80s is just really, 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 like, I don't know. It's very much his niche comedic market, I guess you could say. So once he started breaking out of that, like doing things like in Vampire in Brooklyn, that was a good one. The Nutty Professor really stretched him out with that whole utilizing multiple personalities within the film. And then Mulan. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Who can forget Mushu? It wasn't until like he started going into like the early 2000s when he started kind of losing a little bit of his, or mid 2000s when he started kind of losing a little bit of his luster. Like,
I bet you it probably started with The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It started there. I mean, and then it kind of moved to like The Haunted Mansion. The Haunted Mansion was not a good Disney movie. And then Norbit kind of probably like was the last, it was the last hard-hitting thing before it came to Meet Dave. And then Meet Dave was just like, yep, you're done. No more. Because he didn't really do much else other than Shrek stuff. And I guess he did a couple of music stuff until he came into 2016 where he did Mr. Church, which I heard was okay. But and this is one that I keep hearing and I have yet to see it just because of my preconceived notions about Eddie Murphy. But Dolomite Is My Name, I hear constantly. Like, that is constantly told to me, like, oh, this was a funny movie. You got to see it. Oh, it's so funny. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I've been burned too much by the man. I have been burned. But you take Coming to America and you take everything that was iconic about that. And mind you, just kind of diving in, because expectations and impressions, we're going to talk about that. I just want to kind of roll right into this, because when you talk about Coming to America, the first one, you're talking about some of the first times you had Eddie Murphy as a main character role in an on-screen film. You had Arsenio Hall. You had James Earl Jones as the king. I mean, and then you had all these other people that were just... I mean, you had early appearances by... what's his name? What was the name of that... The big white guy who works at the...
Oh, Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson.
Yeah.
You had, like, probably some of the first appearances of Louis Anderson in that mess. It's like, oh, cool. You know? And then you had John Amos. And then there was just so many people. And I probably should have looked this up, but did Paul Bates, Oha, the guy who was in the first film announcing, you know, or he went in to wake up the prince, and he did the same thing in the second film, and... did he actually do all that singing himself? Because that was really good.
It would appear to be, unless, like, they brought back the same, like, stand-in voice actor for him 30 years later, which is possible.
Because I don't know, I remember what he sang in the first one, but he sang Prince in the second one, and it's like, oh, dang, he can still do it. But I don't know if that's really him. But you had a lot of the comedic opportunities between Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall, and there's just... so many instances in this movie that are like little gems. I'm not saying that the movie as a whole is good. I'm saying that the movie itself has like, it's like when you get a box of Cracker Jacks with peanuts and you look for all the peanuts and then you leave the box of popcorn that's left. It's like, these are all the good yummy peanuts in there. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, apparently. I don't know how you eat Cracker Jacks now.
Oh, yeah. You should see me when I have poppycock, too. I just take out all the little pieces of almonds. And...
what?
You don't know what poppycock is?
No.
Poppycock. It's like a fancy version of Cracker Jacks.
Oh, okay.
I found it in stores one time, and I'm just like, oh, okay, cool. All right, we're going to have to... You know intern Amy is listening to this, and she's going to buy you a box of poppycock. But this the first movie is a gem. Even despite like everything that it does or everything that it is, it still makes out as like this gem of the 1980s. Because, like I said, you have all these great moments between Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall. You have all these really fun instances that, to be honest, comedically carry throughout the 80s and the 90s and even till today. A lot of like the whole round robin dating thing, like people still do that in movies.
Yeah.
There's just so much in the movie that you look and you're like, that's funny. But in terms of acting, let's talk about acting. Mm-hmm. I am most 100% certain out of both of those films that I had no shred of belief that Eddie Murphy was from an African country. His accent came and went like the wind. That man was like, he might as well just say, you can tell Arsenio Hall, like in that second film, he was just like, I can't do the accent no more. So you're just going to take it what it is. And he was just like, he had no accent there. He maybe peppered it in once or twice in that second film. In that first film, he was like, he was trying, but it was constantly in and out because it was like, was he doing an American accent? Is he doing a Zamundan accent? Whatever it may be. Like, where's the dialect? And yeah, by that second movie, Arsenio Hall was like, I'm too old for this. Like, I'm not dealing with this. And I don't know, to be quite honest, if I really cared as much. But to kind of lay the groundwork of the acting, like just if we're looking at principles alone, I didn't believe him at all. Like, I don't know. What about you? Did you believe Eddie Murphy was from some African nation?
No, not that you bring it up, but it's weird that, like, I don't know what he was doing wrong then. Like, if I was, like, to actually, like, well, here are the notes that I have. Like, I don't know how I would, like, explain to him, like, you don't seem like you're actually from, you know, a place that doesn't exist. But, like, it's weird how, like, other actors can totally pull off, like, oh, yeah, like, I am from this country. I am from Wakanda.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you take, like, somebody like Chadwick Boseman was, you know, was phenomenal in, like, his roles as T'Challa. But the fact that his dialect never wavered, and that's, I think that's the biggest problem with Hollywood in general. I think when you start moving into the realm of either comedy or lesser able actors, you just might as well, like, throw accents out the window. I remember one time I went to a screening of Here Comes the Night or something like that. I don't know. It was a Ben Affleck movie. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to play a New Yorker who was sent by his mob boss, because he worked for the mob, who was sent to Florida to oversee the sugarcane plantations or whatever, something along those lines.
Okay.
Because they were rum runners. So the sugar canes they would make rum out of, and they would bring it to, you know, the north. And so about 10 minutes in, I realized I was not going to like this movie. Ben Affleck's accent was nowhere near consistent. He was like making huge ow sounds, like, oh, from New York, and like whatever, and then he'd be like, well, just bring it over here. It's like, come on, you can't do that. That's not how this works. And mind you, that movie was over 2 hours long. I do endure over 2 hours of that mess. The only redeeming quality of that was that Zoe Saldana was in it, and she played kind of a Latina. So it, and she sells it because she's herself Latina. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, at least somebody can talk right. But yeah, when you start getting into that realm of, like, you know, it's kind of laughable, and it's become more of like a common joke within, not a joke, just a funny point, because nobody's made fun of her for it to the extent where she's like, but like, Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda Maximoff, that accent went out the window. I don't know if you ever heard the story of Don Cheadle in the Oceans trilogy. So Don Cheadle's accent in the first film is so bad that people like crapped all over it all the time before the second film came out. So when the second film came out, his accent kind of dwindled heavily. And there are actually some points in the movie where he's like reading a book about speaking other languages. By the time the third movie comes, it's completely gone. So it's there's a fine line in terms of movie and of the sellability, if you will, of where the movie takes place, mm-hmm. where you just have to have that correct. I mean, if the movie took place all in Zamunda, I would be upset. But the fact that it goes to Queens, and Queens is like the ultimate melting pot of everything here in the United States, I was able to let it slide. The fact that you had Ben Affleck, who was in New York for the most of the time, and maintaining this New York persona, didn't fly. Wanda Maximoff, obviously she leaves Sokovia, so I mean, I'm assuming the accent would dwindle. I mean, it usually take a lot more time for it to dwindle, but it dwindled.
With Wanda, the reason was she was supposed to be in hiding, so she had to like kind of learn not to have an accent or whatever.
I don't know. I honestly don't remember paying attention that closely. Just be honest. I'm gonna be dead honest with you. But going back to this movie, Arsenio Hall, his accent gone. Eddie Murphy, non-existent. But
I almost did that earlier today when I was thinking about it.
I get those two names because they're three distinguishable names. Yeah. Edward James, almost James Earl Jones. Like, James Earl Jones, however, as the king was perfect.
Flawless.
Like,
flawless.
You can't even dispute that. Like, I would have easily, the fact that they make mention of Wesley Snipes being the inspiration for Mufasa, I'm like, no. Mufasa's in the other room. You can just kiss your little self goodbye. Go. Like, he is the king, and he totally fills it incredibly.
Yeah.
You know, there's not many other people that you have to really concern yourselves with in the first film. The second film, however, I think they did a much better job of a dialect coach for the children, at least. The children were great. Their accents were perfect. I there was at no point in time did I feel like their accents really took away from the scene. Oddly enough, Wesley Snipes was spot on with his accent. I mean, I don't know, but the dude had it. I mean, what do you think? I thought it was pretty good.
The second one had other things going on, so the accents weren't something that were at top of my mind. But I do remember thinking that the kids were actually really good because, there was just a part where I'm like, you know, these kid actors are actually great. I like them. Was this ridiculousness from what I can remember? His accent was on point,
but everything else.
Oh my God.
So let's touch a little bit on the merits of the first film, because the first film, it's from the 80s. Mm-hmm. So you obviously have to like compare it to that of what you would expect from the 80s, which in this, I mean, it makes sense. You know, frontal nudity at the very beginning of the film, check. these people just having the money to burn and showing up in places where it is dirt poor, check. You know, these people attending, like, these folks dressing really like tourists during the 80s, check. Like, wearing that attire at a nightclub, check. Like, everything fit the bill. Even the whole wanting to be like McDonald's with McDowell's, that's something I can see, you know?
Yeah.
With a lot of, like, the burger wars during that time and all that. Obviously, that's something that could have been feasible. So, some of the highlights, I think I just want to highlight a couple of things really quick from the first film, because I know the majority of this is going to be about the second film. Mm-hmm. I really, oddly enough, I liked how Daryl was just a footnote in the entire movie. He was not somebody who's going to like go toe to toe with Akeem and like fight him for his love.
You know what's amazing, though, is what? For a brief second, I was like, who the heck is Daryl? I just watched this movie earlier today.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I know who we're
talking. I'm eating like an apple here, and you're going to make me spit apple all over this mic. Daryl, the perm.
No, yeah, the Soul Glow guy. Yeah, I know. I know who he's that.
Which, didn't he? He became a doctor in some TV show. I don't know, whatever. I've probably seen him in a couple things here and there.
Yeah, he's been in something else where he was a doctor. I remember that.
But I enjoyed the fact that Daryl was just a footnote in the overall story of somebody getting to know somebody. And mind you, the story isn't bad in the first one. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great storytelling. It does it well. It doesn't create this, like, elongated version of, you know, oh, this is my love, but she got away, but I will come back to her, like, kind of thing. It was very to the point. It was It was a lot more PG than the recent one, I'll tell you that much. because there's, we'll talk about that. I think that was a highlight. I loved anything with James Earl Jones. Like, honestly, anything that he was in, I was like, yes, say it. This is my son. Like, yes, Pride Rock this bad boy. There was so much in there with him, and I love the dynamic between James Earl Jones and his wife in the movie.
Oh yeah, she was great as acting as a queen.
Oh yeah, 100%, which is why I was like, man, her role in this is so important.
Yeah, I was like, when I was watching it earlier, like, I was like, man, I don't remember her being this good from like whenever the last time I saw this movie was. So I was like, I was really impressed with her because she really got, like, you know, wise and regal down, like, she just to a point. She was great.
Yeah. It was Madge Sinclair. Hmm. But her role as, like, just the caring mom, the noble queen, obviously, but also the woman who recognizes not only is she married to the ruler of a country, but she's also a mother to a lost son. And that hits hard in that last act where she's like, you know, she tells her, oh, come off it. You know, he's in love. And it's like, yeah. Tell James Earl Jones. Yeah. Like, it was great. I love that whole last third act where that takes place in the house. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the progression of where it goes from, like, oh, let me serve you a pig in a blanket or whatever, and then it goes to, like, I'll knock you out. Like, yeah, that's exactly where I would take it. But yeah, she is so great in every scene that she's in, and she plays greatly side by side with James Earl Jones. I think that's about it from the first film that I really wanted to highlight. I mean, was there anything else that you saw that you wanted to highlight?
Anything else in the first film? I don't think so. I think we talked about all the good people. So, the second film, then, is probably where we're going to start talking about. Oh, gosh.
I will let you open that door.
No, there's too many places to go. Not enough time.
Okay. So let's look at this. So, coming into the second film, first off, the second film was, I'm assuming, done before COVID, because there's a lot of people out and about, and there's no way they could have filmed that last year. So I'm just saying, there's a lot of people without masks.
Yeah, they could all be CGI people. Deep fakes are getting real, man.
Oh, man, true. Yeah. So the way this film begins is very interesting. Like, you have the prince and his wife, and they're woken up the same way that Prince Akeem was woken up in the first film, so callback. But you come to learn that obviously the king is passing, and he's getting up there, and he's on the verge of passing. Apparently, they don't mention it, but the mother had passed already, but they didn't talk about how. However, the actress actually passed away from cancer in 95. So obviously they couldn't bring her back into this. There is one singular mention of her, which I thought was like kind of robbing that actress of all the good she did in that first film.
Yeah.
So essentially, Prince Akeem has three daughters that are incredible, and yet he's still a disappointment because he couldn't have a boy child, which is weird. It's like, no, like, these girls just whooped your butt like 5 seconds earlier. and no offense to the movie, but I think I found Arsenio Hall just annoying in this one. I didn't really see him as an asset. I just saw him as, like, in the way. I don't know. But, like, the film ultimately sends Eddie Murphy in and Arsenio Hall back to Queens because apparently some shaman that was not in the first film foresees that he actually had a son and that his son is alive in Queens. My first sign that I was not going to like this movie.
That was your first sign?
My first major red flag. There were other little things, but my first major red flag was them essentially retconning the first film and saying, oh, by the way, so I'm sorry, but you were actually drugged and raped in the first movie, and the woman who raped you took your seed and fathered a child and didn't bother to get a paternity test or find out. Which really kind of bothers me, because it's like, first off, Arsenio Hall / Semi, whatever his name is?
Semi.
He should have been hung for that, number one. And number two, that's just not good. Like, no. First off, the retconning was not needed. It wasn't needed at all. Like, the way that film left off, you ruined the credibility and the dignity, I guess, if you want to say, of every effort that Akeem did in that first film. You erased it immediately, because now Akeem is a liar and an obvious fornicator who didn't stay true to his one love.
Because
the whole purpose of him being out in New York was to find a queen.
Yeah,
he himself said there was nobody else, there was nothing else. Like, the whole intentions of the last film is that he had his eyes only on her. That was the whole focus.
Right.
Now, apparently, he had his eyes on her and his thingy in someone else. Like, for one instance.
Yeah, and then the movie chooses to hand wave that away with drug use, which is really weird.
Well, it makes it rape. That's what it does. It's like, you don't... Well, how many times have you heard someone say, my bad, you know what? I accidentally gave you drugs, but you know, I had a really great time last night. Like, no, that's not how that works. That is not how any of this works. And the fact that they make mention of it, and then they have Akeem describe the situation, because apparently he was on something that he actually saw a... And that's another thing. That would have made it into the first film.
Yeah.
Like, a wild boar broke through the front door, jumped into his lap, and rammed him over and over. Like, okay, I get it. That doesn't seem like I would feel like that would be something I would feel in the morning. Like, I don't know. I'm just saying. Like, I feel like that situation would have heavy ramifications bodily as well as, like, psychologically. After the fact.
Like the whole thing with them going to New York, it's just dumb and kind of a bad idea. And also, kind of, it makes Akeem dumb in a way that is not great. Because even sidestepping that whole issue, if you just rewind back even slightly, of him having the issue of, I don't have a son. Like, my first thought was like, well, why does this matter? You're going to be king. Just change the rules. That's how you even ended up marrying Lisa in the end of the first movie.
Exactly.
This is, like, such a non-problem.
It feels like no time passed between the last film, in terms of, like, mentally thinking, like, the logic of the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
No time passed between the first film and this film, because it was like, nothing changed. They even make mention of it, like, you were king and changed nothing. And it's like, all this film did was just dumb down everything that made the first Akeem in the first film great.
Right.
And it's frustrating because that first film, I swear I'm not crying.
I was sad. It was so bad.
No, because it's true. Because everything you see out of that first film, yes, it's a comedy film. It has its points. And the story is good. And in the end, you're rooting for, like, Akeem and Lisa to get married.
Yeah.
And you're cheering at them, like, oh, yes. You know, and then you come to this point and, like, what the heck was Akeem doing out in Queens the first time around?
This, like, movie made me feel like, why did she stay? Like,
yeah, 100%.
Like, because Akeem's, like, so different and kind of just his dad in this one. That it seems like he's learned nothing in the first movie and 30 years after that.
I think the other worst part about this movie is he literally, and I believe you just said this, but it's so messed up in my mind. He literally just turns into his dad.
Yeah.
He literally becomes the obtuse ruler for a situation that is all too familiar.
Yeah, like, if anyone, Akeem should be like, this is like deja vu. Like, he should be able to see, like, oh, I can make a change when I'm ruler. It's not that big of a deal. But, like, he's all of a sudden, like, it's like, tradition. Like, you were the one who broke tradition first.
Yeah, exactly. He was the one who went out, found a non-Zamundan, non-royal person to marry, and then married him. And then his son is like, yo, I'm going to do the same. And he's like, no, you'll ruin the country. Like, however, I don't know, however he tries to say it. Like, it's like, why does that matter to you? You literally did the exact same thing. And there are parts in this movie that just really, they really try to create meaningful moments and they just fall flat.
Mm.
I have no idea what Lisa's dad was trying to tell him when they were in the back of his McDowell's, in the back of that restaurant, and he's mopping towards the tail end.
Yeah, I remember the
scene. What did he say to her? What did he say to him? Like, I have no idea what he tried to say. Like, yeah, sometimes you got to make them listen. I'm like, wait, what are we talking about here? And then he's like, what would your mom say? I'm like, okay, you just did all this stuff about what your dad would say or how your dad would be proud, and now you're bringing it to your mom, who's completely opposite of his dad. It didn't make sense to me, because it's like, first off, I had no idea what the heck he was talking about. Whatever his name, Cleo? No. Whatever the dad's name was. So it was like, I was trying to follow along, but I couldn't really. And then Eddie Murphy decided, okay, I'm going to put my broom down or put my mop down and go and, you know, find answers. And then they're like, hey, what would your mom think? And it's like, that's the question I wanted asked in the beginning, because that's the one that actually has the answers. And he just looks at him and then turns. And it's like, no, I need this answer. Like, what would you say? That was frustrating.
It's frustrating because, like, if he had at any point just thought about his mom, the movie would have been over.
Oh, completely. Completely. Because it's like all the common sense was on the women's side of all of their families. And ironically, none of the male people in this movie listen to women. Like, this is a misogynistic movie that should have been done in the 80s. And it's like, oh, little girls can't fight back, or, you know, women can't do this. I'm like, okay.
Where you been?
Right? This is 2021. We got a female vice president. That's how we work. There were so many. What other parts for you? Because I know I'm probably going to get lost in some of these frustrating parts, but what other parts were frustrating for you with the second film?
Oh, man. Okay, let's try to narrow it down to one. Okay, let's start with Leslie Jones. She was just kind of a lot. I've only seen her in two things, this and Ghostbusters, and they're both not great movies. So no. I don't know if she's any good or not, because like the movies she's in, like the two I've seen her in, are just so bad. But yeah, she was coming in like at 110, and that kind of just needed to be toned down, like, at least in half, if not more.
No, entirely.
But yeah, I just had a big problem with her. Also, like, I think one of my other problems with this movie is just what is going on with Zamunda in this other country. Like,
yeah. Like, what is their relationship to each other? Are they right next to each other? Because I don't know if it was kind of on the nose that the other country is called Nextdoria. That's what it was called. I caught it at the beginning.
Just thought they said, oh, next door.
No. The country is called Nextdoria.
This is the main problem with the movie right here. Next, it's uncreative.
No.
When it really needs to be a lot more creative. Like, the first one was pretty creative.
Yeah.
But, it's a similar, like, a story like you've probably heard before, but, like, told in a very different way. This movie is so heavily relying upon you understanding the first movie that it is not in itself its own movie. It's just the first movie with, like, you know, really bad paint of a new movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's the same movie with CGI. Because the home is CGI now. It looks nothing like the home in the first film. Color-wise. A lot of the comedic parts which required animals or which required scenic backgrounds, it was obviously green screen. Like there was a level of this movie that just didn't seem authentic. Not that obviously the first film seemed so like realistic. I'm like, oh my God, they're in some other country. No, but I mean, in certain scenes, they had animals. They had zebras and they had
elephants and zebras just running around. Everyone's like, it's Africa.
Exactly. this movie just really tried to add way too much. And mind you, I know Queens has a lot of Queens probably. I'm not too sure, but like Queens probably has a lot of very colorful characters. You didn't have to put every single one from Queens into the personalities of these few people and then put them on screen. Like, it just, like, I have to admit, I haven't seen Leslie Jones in a lot of things, but in what I have seen her in, like, in Masterminds, she was in Masterminds with, what's that guy's name? Galvanakis or
no? Oh, Zach Galvanakis.
She was in that one. She was in Sing. She was in.
So, like, I don't know as much about Leslie Jones as you do, but like, is she good or is she okay?
She usually plays the same character. Like, what you've seen her in Ghostbusters is the same as what you see her in Masterminds. She's very bombastic. She's very, like, front and center in the scene. She's very loud and, you know... And mind you, there are places for that. When she did her stint on Saturday Night Live, it was perfect. She fit the bill. Mm-hmm. The problem is like, that stretching to work in, like, the small doses so it can carry throughout a whole film, I don't think is fully set in with her. Mm. And it makes it difficult to enjoy her scenes when every scene she's like... Bow! Ah, let's go get drunk. Like Bobcat Goldthwait right there. and that just seems to be her character persona. And to be honest, man, like she was a bit much in this movie. Like the talking of like, I she seemed to have a line for every single thing that was said. And I don't know if that was by the writer's choice or by her choice ad-libbing, but I was like, I'm good, girl. Just tone it back a bit, you know? The guy who played the son, I thought actually did a pretty good job.
No, I liked him. Like, he was actually one of the bright spots of the movie because, like, he fit in with, like, the story they were trying to tell of, like, you know, I'm just some random dude who didn't have a dad. And I'm like, oh, I'm actually an African prince. That's cool. Like, I'm going to my home country. Like, his whole, like, everything he did in this movie, I thought made sense for the character. And I thought was, like, it was good. So I actually really liked him in this movie. He was, like, one of the few things I actually did like about the movie.
He, his name is Jermaine Fowler. You remember, he was actually in Sorry to Bother You. Salvador?
Yes. He was. Yeah.
He was in that. He was apparently in, and I don't really want to rewatch it to look for it, but he was apparently in Judas and the Black Messiah.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to watch that. Good on him.
I don't want to.
It's too much.
But he was great in this movie. I loved his timing, his ability to, because he's not a comedian, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But his timing on some of those comedic bits were like, spot on. Like, they were good. And it just made for funny situations. You know, like the whole, when he first encounters, like, the three girls who are wanting to bathe him, and he's like, the pause is funny. Unfortunately, he had to go talk to his mom, whom, that whole scene. Yeah. And his instance when he's singing, I guess, alongside, or he's rapping when he first meets the warlord's daughter.
Yeah.
that was cool. And like his whole comedic timing, like, is this what you want? He's like, yeah, like that was funny. So I do appreciate his ability to work within the dynamic and the situation that he's in. He's a very native actor where he kind of slips into the role and he becomes what he needs to for the sake of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, by the way, the middle child, I think her name was Uma?
Oh yeah, that's actually
Eddie Murphy's daughter. So I was like, oh, that's cool. Did you also know the oldest daughter, Mika, is just Akeem backwards?
Wow. No.
M-E-E-K-A?
Yeah.
That's Akeem.
That is.
So it's like instead of having Akeem Jr., you had Mika.
Hmm.
It was just interesting. I was thinking about that, like, okay, I guess, you know, little tidbit there that didn't really get playability within anything. It's like, okay, yeah.
We need three girls' names. Just spell his name
just
backwards.
Spell his name backwards. I think, honestly, though, I still have to stand by my thought in that, like, anything that Arsenio Hall was doing just seemed a bit much. And not because he wasn't good in the scenes, but because he just... his comedy chops just weren't always there. Like no joke, his reverend preacher character is extremely creepy. Like the preacher, the reverend.
Yeah.
He's super creepy. Like I thought he was creepy in the first one. He is super creepy in this one.
Yeah, I don't know why they brought that character back.
Like, I have no idea.
You gave him a new one. That's fine. Like,
yeah, he's the old shaman dude who's... that was, and that whole thing was weird too. That whole ceremonial circumcision thing, or yeah. Leslie Jones is like, "We like it here, baby. Just let him take a little off the top." I'm like, "No,
that's not how that works."
there are medical stations to do this cleanly.
Also, he said he has already been circumcised. What are you cutting? Like, I don't want that. Like, don't make me think about this hard.
Like, what do you got to do? Stretch the tape or something? Come on. this movie made every effort, like I said, to try to create comedic moments that just either were kind of over the top or...
you had already seen it before. Yeah. Like when his kid talks to the warlord's daughter, like, by themselves.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, what do you like? Whatever you like, which is the same thing.
It's literally the same conversation.
There's so much copying and pasting in this, like, movie that, like, I'm like, did they just open up the old script? And they're like, okay, what do like, we want? Right, just, like, oh, take this section. It was funny.
Exactly. I was like, just put it on the wall. We'll throw a dart. Whichever one it sticks to, we'll do in the movie. And... the problem is that this probably could have been a better film. Like, I think if there was more care and effort into creating a movie that really encapsulated, like, the progression of what Prince Akeem did as one of the rulers of Zamunda, I feel like we could have actually had a better film. You know, if there was some progress, if there were some things, like if there was a daughter... you know, who was wanting to be ruler. Like, because ultimately, this is what happens. This movie is Black Aladdin. Like, that's all it is. This movie essentially has somebody who wants to marry somebody who's not in their station, and then out of sheer will and granting of a wish, they are able to suddenly marry them altogether because they're changing policy. Like, that's what it felt like.
Yeah, like, now that I understand what you're saying, it is that.
There's no heart to it. And it's sad to say because it's Eddie Murphy. And I know the kind of the cult following he has. But there's no heart behind this second one. Like, the first one had heart.
Yeah.
The first one, like that whole scene, I loved. I think, and I should have mentioned this earlier, I loved the subway scene. Like, with him and Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just there. He's following her. He's trying to talk to her. And he's explaining. And everybody's fully engaged. And everybody on the subway cart is, like, looking. And then the way it ends when she leaves. And the old lady comes in front of him. And she's like, I could be. He's like, if you're a real prince. And he just hands her the earrings that she gave back to him. That was good. That was a great scene.
Yeah.
We get Lavelle, who's the son of, you know, Akeem, trying to get married to the woman he loves in a crack house church with a really creepy reverend, and the dad Prince Akeem, or King Akeem at that time, kind of bursting through the doors and doing exactly what his dad did 30 years prior. And it's like, I think that lesson was learned already, Eddie Murphy. Like, I don't think that belongs in here.
I just don't understand. Like,
I feel like, here, you want to know my biggest picture here? Because I've already said a couple of things, so I think it kind of evolves into this. I think Eddie Murphy took ideas from several other movies, including his own, and then put it into this movie so that it could work. Because, like we mentioned, you have all the remnants of Coming to America, the first one.
Right.
We get this Black Aladdin kind of vibe. And then ultimately, you remember when they mentioned about, when she mentioned Beauty Shop?
Yeah.
With Queen Latifah?
That reminds me of something I want to talk about.
It's her wanting to essentially open up her own shop. Kind of reminds me of like The Holiday, where she just wants to open up her own bakery. Queen Latifah does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's just a lot of little like tidbits and things that are being pulled out. And it's like, the whole purpose of Wesley Snipes is completely bogus. Like, he is no threat at all.
Yeah.
Whatever army he had behind him, apparently were all whooped by three, you know, young girls and an old Wesley Snipes. And he apparently did not have the technology to call for backup or to get the rest of his army to come through or something, because he was just by himself with four other very capable. That whole thing seemed very, very lacking in the usage of Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, it was kind of just over and done with before you even really was like, wait, what? Also, what was he doing in the castle? Like, I know he was supposed to be there. It's like, where's the prince? Blah, blah, blah. But, like, that feels like the type of thing where, like, front gate should be like, oh, you can't come in.
I thought that exact same thing the first time we meet him. The Oha, whatever his name is, comes in and is like, sir, Nexdorian soldiers are coming this way. And
yeah,
like,
he
okay.
did say that. That is the...
I'm like, why aren't they barricading the door? Why? No, they all get out of their car with... like AK-47.
Yeah, the fact that they had guns in there. Oh my gosh, that didn't make any sense that you'd bring guns into a foreign throne room.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and you're right there, and it's like you have like over 12 people with armed weapons pointing, that could be pointing it at the next heir of your country. Where is his security? Like, Arsenio Hall can't do it all. You know, I'm just saying. But that whole scene was just like weird. It's like, if you have somebody who is titled warlord or general, I would be worried about an army. Why would you let somebody who has the army behind him to just waltz into your door?
Yeah, I feel like both Akeem and his dad dropped the ball on building an army that would protect the country. But
right.
Yeah, also, like, this reminded me of some part in... of when, what's his son's name again?
Lavelle.
Yeah, Lavelle is talking to his royal hairdresser or whatever, and like they're talking about movies, and then they were saying about how all movies are just sequels and remakes, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you even like just highlighting how ridiculous this whole scenario is?
Yeah.
Like, that seemed so wild to me.
It seemed like whoever was writing that scene realized what they were doing already after the fact and didn't know that there was a delete button. And so they tried to backtrack it in the script. However, there are some exceptions and the blah, blah, blah. It's like,
yeah, this isn't going to be one of them.
No. And that whole self-referential moment in the film, if it was lent for comedic relief or some type of like, ha moment, it didn't land well.
Nope.
If anything, it furthered the mindset that this movie is not good. Like, just no bueno.
Also, you know what's not good about this movie? Product-based placement. All over the place. Oh, hold on a sec. Let me switch my tracks in Spotify. Full screen open Spotify on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Background, McDonald's ad.
Yep.
This is the real Big Mac with sesame seeds. Like... That's not great.
The Pepsi, the one where, you know, McDowell's is, you know, Pepsi is the official drink of McDowell's. And I'm like, no. Besides, I think Pepsi is the official drink of Taco Bell. But
yeah.
Either way, it's not worth putting that much thought into it, to be honest. But there's so much in this movie that I just feel like they missed the boat so hard on like just landing well. And it's unfortunate because this movie had a lot of good opportunities. The children, I would have loved to have seen that resolve with recognizing, okay, my daughter has been groomed to lead this country, so let's move in that direction. And then the movie is about them facing that opposition about her being that.
Yeah, movie about the girls would have been good.
100%. Mm-hmm. I didn't need Leslie Jones and her crew coming through. I definitely didn't need Tracy Morgan. He was not really necessary.
Yeah, you could delete him from the movie.
Completely. Like, he didn't do anything. Yeah. There was nothing he did other than showing Lavelle and Akeem how to walk. That was it. That was all he did. Apparently, he became good friends with, what's his name, though? Arsenio Hall, you know, in the film, and they shared a drink. Like, oh, cool. I don't know. I mean, you guys fought on TV once. Great. Like, I don't get
that. Which didn't even make any sense. He was, so Arsenio Hall's in a room. He's talking to not Trevor Noah. It's Trevor Noah.
Yeah, it's Trevor Noah.
And then all of a sudden, like, you split screen in Tracy Morgan, and then they start arguing, and then he walks over and they start fighting. And I'm like, you were in the same room this whole time?
Yeah. What, one little tidbit. So I don't know if you know this. So during the 80s, there was a movie called Trading Places.
Yes, if you're going to go on that whole route with the two guys who were poor, and then, yeah, I know that bit.
Well, do you know how it fits into this one too?
Yeah, because the kid that he's interviewing with is the
great-great-grandson of one of those guys.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. I think the first time around, not a lot of people catch it. This time around is kind of in your face, so if you don't catch it, you're just blind or you're not aware or you haven't seen Trading Places, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting kind of
Easter egg. Means that there's two people with Eddie Murphy's face in that universe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which means, thankfully, they didn't do like a Prince and a Pauper type thing. That would have been interesting.
They
would have
if they thought of it. I just know it.
They were like, oh, look, this guy looks just like you. Let's trade places. Like, I don't know, whatever he does.
Trading Zamundas.
I feel like you're trying to say a fake currency. Like, how much money you got? I got 12 Zamundas. Wrapping this thing up, was there any other thing that you wanted to highlight or that you wanted to complain a little bit more on about the film?
No, okay, I'll say this. This is a nice thing. I actually liked the wedding dress from the second movie that she was wearing because that looked
the big red one.
Like, it was like really huge and just like all over the place. I was like,
That thing was like 15 feet wide.
Yeah.
She was walking through and tripping people with that bad boy. I do have to say, I love / hate the music in this movie. Because I loved it because I liked seeing Salt and Pepper and In Vogue.
That was way too much, man.
That was funny.
Too much.
And then you brought in Gladys Knight, and she's changing the whole entire words of Midnight Train to Georgia. Ending in ultimately a stab at the prince's inability to father a son with his wife.
Yeah.
Which I'm like it turns into ultimately like a parody. Mm-hmm. I will have to admit it was pretty cool having Morgan Freeman there narrate.
Yeah, at first I was like, is that? And it just had, pants over. I was like. Mm.
His whole like pretending to cry because of the situation, it was great.
But I feel like all of these dang cameos kind of just go to show you how much people liked the first one and were like, oh, I could be in this. Yes, I would love to.
Mm, true. Did you know that there was actually an offer to Samuel L. Jackson to reprise his role as the robber in the first film? Apparently he was too busy. Thank God. Yeah. He dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, he did.
Poor Louis Anderson.
But even if he would have been there.
No.
No, he would have been
there. God, no. He would have been like, mother, I ain't got time. No.
Yeah. You would have been finished to say that.
But then you start getting into the realm, like, so that whole musical situation was interesting, and then you get to the musical insertion with Oha singing that Prince song, which I thought was pretty good, which it was him singing Prince, and then it transitioning to Lavelle singing rap. I thought that was fun. But then you get to the end, and nobody, and I mean nobody, nobody asked for sexual chocolate.
No.
It wasn't even a highlight of the first film. It was a blip. No, it's, there's no mention of it after that. In the first film, it happens in that first, in that little 5 minute span in the first act, not even in the second act, in the first act, and then it's gone.
I don't even know why Lavelle would know who this is.
I don't even know why any of them would know who this is. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, this guy, Randy Watson, no, he needed a... I don't know how he's still alive. Like, how was he making money? I don't know. But that was the hate part of that film. In terms of its music, that one, it kind of just drove me off the edge of like, well... Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm done with this movie.
Yeah.
I didn't even see if there was anything else after the movie, which I'm pretty sure was probably bloopers or something. I didn't watch any of them.
It's bloopers and then what? John Legend singing.
Legit singing? Or just...
No, he was like actually singing. He was singing that Coming to America song.
Oh my God. Okay, so I didn't miss out on anything.
No, you didn't.
So, wrapping this whole thing up, I'll go first so you can give the final thoughts.
Okay.
This movie doesn't pass for me. I didn't see enough to create a cohesive story that actually had content to it. Yes, it has a beginning, middle, and end. Yes, it has three acts, but those three acts have no connectivity to each other, nor do the content within it make up for a story that's engaging enough for me to stay awake. Let's be honest. The only reason why I stayed awake for this one was because we were going to review it. And that's unfortunate because I wanted this to work. I liked watching the first one. I hadn't seen it in so long that when I resaw it today, the first one, I was like, you know, this actually has a lot more heart than I remember. And I enjoyed it. The first one definitely passes, obviously, and it's definitely one that holds a very unique place in the heart of all 80s movie lovers. In terms of monocles, for the first film, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I liked it. Like I said, it had bits and pieces. It definitely stood as a testament to what was considered comedy during that era of movies. However, going to this movie, the 2021 Coming to America, I'm probably going to have to give it a 1.5. And that's one for Oha singing Prince and the 0.5 for En Vogue and Salt and Pepper. That was it. What about you, Spence? How do these two films stack up for you?
Okay. So here's the thing about the first movie. That movie was so popular and persisted, had a persistent popularity that when the movie Black Panther came out, people were cosplaying as people from Coming to America in that movie. So, like, that kind of just gives you an idea of, like, how much people really resonated with that movie.
Yeah.
Like, I liked that movie. I remember seeing it as a kid, and I thought, this movie's cool. And I still like that. Still like it from what I saw today. So, the first movie passes, and I will also give it 4 monocles.
Nice.
The second movie, it had such an impossible high bar to clear that before it even attempted to run at it, I was like, you're not going to make this. Why are you even trying?
Hmm.
Because like it just seemed obvious. I would have been shocked if this movie was watchable. And like this movie kind of just really isn't for me. Like there's just so many little things and big things like, logic of people and people not learning and then just people being all over the place to like 20 billion cameos. Like, mm-hmm. there's just too much going on, and it's not focused on, like, you know, this is what a story should be, and it should be, like, more thought through and, like, have more of a message to say. Because I don't really feel like this movie has a message that is not different from the first one. It's kind of the same message, but told in a worse way.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so for me, this movie gets a one. And really, most of that one is for James Earl Jones. Also, how dare you get him out of his bed to be in your dumb movie.
Very true. 100%. I am in full agreement of that. Yeah, this movie definitely... I think the only saving grace this movie has is that it is put on through Amazon. Because if it was just straight through the theaters, this would have been a huge flop. So that's its only saving grace, is the fact that it's already been bought and paid for. So everybody's already gotten their money. But yeah, here's to hoping, like,
when it give up.
Well,
really.
Well, apparently not, because apparently there's a third one that he's talking about. But he said he wants to actually be really 75 when he does it, not like makeup.
I thought that as a joke.
I don't think so. It's Eddie Murphy. He's dressed up in fat suits and in women's suits. You know, he's about two steps above Martin Lawrence. So, you know, and we already know how we see Martin Lawrence since the last Bad Boys movie.
Oh,
so.
Gosh.
But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out on all our streaming platforms, on all our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can also check us out on all of our streaming platforms, Google Play, iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, anywhere where you can stream music or stream podcasts, you can find us there. Check us out, give us a link, give us a like, and if you want, give us a 5-star review. This was a very unique interview or conversation, and this goes without saying, in that when it comes to making funny movies, we are in an age where you can't just make a funny movie. You have to make a smart funny movie. And by smart, I don't mean, oh, it has to be hyper intelligent and has to be like, oh, Big Bang Theory and blah, 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 blah. No, be smart in the fact that we have access to all the technology in the world. We can find out if you are cheating or pulling stuff from other places, or if you are choosing to really dumb down something because you think the audience won't get it. Like, no, be smart about it. It has to be smart comedy. Because if not, all you're going to be is just left in the dust of all these newer and up-and-coming comedic actors, writers, directors, and they will take your place.
Yep.
So, but again, that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.